GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar.
We don't know if it will happen today, but Julio Carrillo's name is on the list of possible witnesses in our continuing coverage of the murder trial of Sharon Carrillo in Waldo County Superior Court. George Steve Blackwell of Lanham, Blackwell & Baber, again on the PDQ Door telephone line with insight for us. He's on line three if you want to welcome him back to our show.
Yesterday, the headline, in her final days, the 10-year-old said, "I feel like I'm dying." That was the headline that went across all of the media pretty much in the state. Sometimes there are things surfacing beneath that that we should look at too. Was that the biggest thing yesterday?
Well, I don't know that that was the biggest thing yesterday. No, I mean, we've heard about that a lot. There's a lot going on in this trial. And I think we're starting to get some sense of where the defense is going with this. A lot of sense, really, in terms of where they're going. You had cross-examination of the detectives. And here, the defense attorney attacked the cross, the interrogation, which all of Sharon's statements pretty much came out of, as being coercive, psychologically coercive, and with her limited IQ and mental health problems, they continue to pound away at the fact that her confessions or her statements made throughout shouldn't be taken at face value. And just to give you a sense of where McLean is going in this regard, he indicated, and this may have been as part of a motion for acquittal after the state rested its case, which is a matter of course, but he pointed out no eyewitnesses that say Sharon laid a hand on Marissa, except Julio. And there's a little teaser about whether he's going to testify or not, right? No DNA linking Sharon to the crime. And we have blood-stained pajamas. We have a mop. We have a belt. But no DNA from Sharon on any of those things. And he says, the only direct evidence that Sharon beat or killed Marissa came out of her mouth. So he's not trying to say that she didn't say these things. She did say them, and he's making it clear that we shouldn't take them at face value. So the next part of his strategy is to go after the detectives and chip away at some of the techniques that they used when they interrogated her. Just to give you a couple of small examples, because I'd like to be in the courtroom, but I wasn't, and I have to make that clear to the listeners. But you pick up on these things in the press reports, like you said, George. But she admitted to the detective that she locked Marissa in a closet. There weren't any locks on the closet. Now, that doesn't seem like much, but when you start to think about it and put all these confusing inconsistencies in her statements that she gave to the police, they start to loom somewhat larger. And you start to think about, what can you really rely on anything that she's saying? Is her memory bad? Is it her mental health? Is it her IQ? What is it? Is it the pressure of being in a room for hours and being having the detective come in and close the door on the second round and close the door of the interview room and telling Sharon, you know, things you're saying aren't true. In other words, he goes out for a while, lets her rest. Then he comes back in and he starts going at her really hard and putting her on the spot, really intimidating her. They lie to her during the interview. They tell her that when they talk to Julio, and then they lead her to believe that Julio implicates her, right? We see these things on television all the time in detective shows, but when you're dealing with an individual like a juvenile, a very young defendant, or you're dealing with an adult who has very limited capacities, you're not dealing with a savvy, hardened criminal who's tough and can take it. You're dealing with a very fragile individual psychologically, and your tactics work. I think that's where McLean is going with his cross-examinations of the detectives and where he's probably going to go with his experts after that. These are just snippets of things that there are a lot more things in the reports that I looked at that, for example, he tells her that, gets her to agree to what Julio said, even though she denies it. And he does that by telling her, well, he's an honest man. Tells Sharon he's an honest man. And that's designed to convince Sharon that Julio had admitted what happened. And McLean asked a good question. So basically, you're telling us that you, detective, believed everything Julio told you, right? So you can start to feel where McLean's going with this in terms of whether Julio testifies or not.
Steve Blackwell from Lanham, Blackwell & Baber. Steve, let us ask you this. There are some people who are listening to your analysis, agreeing with you, and at the same time, they're saying, yeah, but she didn't stop it from happening, whether or not she could feel or whether she felt she had the power to stop it from happening. And we've heard in repeated now videos and interviews where she says, I should have, or I wish I had.
Right.
Is that tantamount? Is that tantamount to murder?
Well, depraved. The question you're asking me is that depraved indifference? Is it depraved and is it indifference? I'm not sure it's either. And I say that because if it's indifference, that doesn't really wash very well if you've got a psychopath living with you who's torturing you and your children. You're not likely to step outside the lines and do what you know is right. And I think that's where the expert testimony would be helpful, to explain the psychology of why people who are caught up in a cycle of abuse like this can't bring themselves to get break free of it. We hear cases all the time where partners stay together for a long time in a cycle of abuse and they can't break it. They file multiple protection from abuse. They dismiss them. They go back. They come back. Why? But this case is striking because they stayed together and they worked together in these horrific circumstances. And why didn't she break out? Well, if she had a normal intellect, a normal IQ, if she didn't have mental health problems, if she wasn't dependent on him, having two small children who she probably was trying to protect from him as well, not just herself. It's very complicated, and I'm sure that there's plenty of experts who could testify that that's the kind of situation where people can't come forward and tell.
There was one defense witness yesterday.
And is it indifferent? I'm not sure it fits the bill.
There was one defense witness yesterday, a neighbor, who testified that she watched Julio Carrillo push the back of Sharon Carrillo's knee, trying to make her fall because she was carrying children. Now, that in and of itself doesn't tell you everything, but it tells you something. Does it not?
It tells you a lot. It tells you a great deal. That's absolutely bullying somebody. Who among us have had a big brother or some kid at school that's come up behind us and tried to trip us or something like that? But when you're holding a baby, the other thing he did, one of the witnesses said that she saw her putting her child in a car seat. And the old trick, you have Julio in the driver's seat stepping on the gas and moving it forward. And he did it repeatedly, and he was laughing.
What a dick.
But both times, you have a baby involved. So you have to start to look at these things and think about that. And I know that the Attorney General Leanne asked on cross-examination why didn't Sharon come forward when Julio wasn't around. You know, she asked her if she'd ever been, without him, and if so, why didn't she come forward? So, I see both sides of it, but I really think you can't overstate the fact that she was embroiled in just a a relationship that just doesn't make sense to anybody, any of us, anybody that's normal or reasonably normal, if any of us are. But for it to be so controlling, so chilling, with threats to kill, and there were threats to going back and forth, right? I mean, one of the other neighbors testified that there was a lot of fighting going on, and she heard Julio threaten to kill Sharon a number of times, and that he was jealous, and there was Sharon accused him of cheating, and she threatened to kill him. I mean, there's a lot going on that's starting to come to light in terms of the two places they live. You know, Sharon outside screaming and yelling for him to let her into the garage. There's a lot going on, a lot of fighting, a lot of noise. It's so bad. One of the neighbor's daughters couldn't sleep. When the neighbors came in to the, Sharon and Julio's apartment in Stockton Springs a number of times, and every time he came in, Sharon was sitting in a chair holding a baby, and she wouldn't move. So, you know, I could see there's always two sides to every trial, right? Always two sides to every piece of testimony. But when you look at this thing as a whole, and we're not done yet, I think once we get some clarity from or help from experts to testify about these behaviors, what seem to be inconsistent behaviors with what we would normally expect someone to do, it might add more depth to the defense's case.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.